So I really did not particularly enjoy this parak or this masechta. And as I got older and I started to learn more, I regained an appreciation for this masechta and how incredibly varied and broad it is in terms of the way it applies both in the lamdos, the theory, and also in how it applies to practice. So what I want to do in Hashutafin, so there's a number of different sugyas that come up, and we'll see all of them as we go through the Gemara, because we're going to go in order of the Gemara, so it's going to be a little bit disjointed at times in terms of the overarching approach to the sugyas we cover. But the many of the topics that we discuss here are about partnership formation, partnership dissolution, the responsibilities of partners to each other, how you can force partners or not force partners to behave in certain ways depending on how that works, and how real estate partnerships can be formed or not formed depending on the situation. It also just governs shared use of communal property and communities in general. In fact, the sugya about taxes and how a tax system in halacha can also be found in this parak. So there's a lot of discussion of different communal and group obligations. And this is really the primary text for that. So that's what really we're going to start with. So the way we're going to do this is we're going to start by reading the Mishnah and the Gemara today, and then we'll start to unpack aspects of the each sugya as we go through them. So the first parak, the first sugya here is the Mishnah, and it's about the first amud or so of Gemara on Amud Beis. So we'll take a look at that. There's two major sugyas that I want to discuss here. One that we'll discuss this morning, and the second, which we'll probably have to leave for next week because it's going to take us a little bit of time to work through the Gemara. So let's take a look at the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Hashutafin shiratzu la'asos mechitza. Partners that want to make a wall. So the obvious, of course, question which the Gemara is going to address almost immediately is, okay, what if they don't want, right? Why is the Mishnah specifying want? So that's going to be issue number one, which we're going to come to. It won't be the subject of our conversation today, but note that that's an important language in the Mishnah. Bachatzer bonin, if so, they want to make a wall in their chatzer. Now, just in order to give context here for a second, you need to understand the Mishnah-Gemara neighborhood structure, okay? So the way a neighborhood is structured in the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara is what's called Mavoi Chatzer Bayis Gina. The way that works is there's what's called, what we would call, the closest modern equivalent is the Manhattan building, okay? A Mavoi is a lobby, okay? It's a big open area, which everybody uses to go in and out of their gated community. And you can do certain things in there, but your action and your freedom of action is somewhat restricted in that space. Now, off of this central Mavoi, you have a lot of chateros, courtyards. So the way I do that in the modern terminology is it's like a hallway. So you go up to your floor. So your floor is your chatzer, right? All of your neighbors share the hallway, right? But people from other floors don't share your hallway. They share their hallway. So
right. Just to be clear, when you make an er chatzerot, it's not a hallway.
Correct. So we'll discuss in a little bit how er chatzeros is fundamentally different than what we're talking in terms of your shared right of use. Meaning er chatzeros is not subject to the rules of the way we look at chatzer. So, but it's related to it, meaning because it's defined by the chatzer. We're going to talk about that in a minute. So the chatzer is where it comes off the mavoi. Nathan, there's gemaras. You can take your gemara from the shelf. I'm going to dig through the closet and find more over the rest of the week.
Baba Basra.
Yeah. So the chatzer comes off the mavoi, and then off of the chatzer you have batim. Different houses. So each person owns their own house. All of the people who own the houses that are attached to a particular chatzer have rights to use that chatzer. They're looked at as shared owners, and the mavoi is shared by all of the owners of the chatzerot. So it's basically, think like your apartment, you kind of off your hallway, and then all the hallways kind of operate the lobby. Think about it that way, but instead it's like in a gated community. It's all flat. We're not talking about, you know, in one building. Now, Mark raised the point of Erev Chatzeros. So there's two things in Erevin. One of the reasons why we need an Erev Chatzeros and what's called a Shituf Mavos is because no one person owns a Chatzer, right? It's multi-party property. So it's not completely viewed as a Rishus Hayachid, right? If you think about it, the Rishus Harabim, the public domain, is outside the Mavoi. The Mavoi, it opens from the Rishus Harabim into this courtyard. And then from this kind of giant area, there are private courtyards with houses on them. So the way Chazal view the Mavoi and the Chatzer are somewhere in between the Rishus HaYachid, which is your house, and the Rishus HaRabim, which is the street. And therefore, we need some kind of Eruv to allow you to carry from one Rishus into another, because, again, a Chatzer is not quite the same as a house. It's also not quite the same as a Mavoi. It's less private. So an Eruv Chatzeros allows you to carry from one Chatzer into the next Chatzer. There's a door between them. And a sheet of mavos allows you to, and you can go through the mavoi, and the sheet of mavos allows you to carry from one mavoi into another. So say you have a Rishas HaRabim here, and there's a small street here with a mavoi that goes this way, and you have chaseros around with houses around the edge, right? It almost looks, imagine, like a master planned community in parts of Israel, right? A lot of communities are actually built this way, where you have a major thoroughfare, you have small streets coming off, and then you have, you know, long courtyards with houses off of them, right? So can you carry from this side to this side? So that's basically the entire first five prakim of Maseches Eruvin, and all of our modern Eruvin are built on those principles. And the second half of Maseches Eruvin is, can I carry from in this courtyard to this courtyard, which are side by side, can I carry from one to the next? Not by walking through the street, but by walking directly from courtyard one to courtyard two. So that's what we call an Eruv Chatzeros. Now, the way we practically do this in our buildings in Manhattan, so the way that works is we generally assume that because we have what's called a Tikkun Eruvin, which is the Eruv that goes around the city, so we view the entire city as one giant chatzer. And therefore, it's usually the custom of whoever's in charge of the Eruv to make an Eruv Chatzeros on behalf of all of the homes in said Eruv. So for example, in Washington Heights, Rabbi Schechter puts out a memo every year, usually right after Yom Kippur. This year, I don't recall seeing it, but I think it probably got lost in the war hullabaloo afterwards when we got back to YU. Rabbi Schechter usually puts out a memo that anybody who wants to share an Eruv Chatzeros, he has a box of matzah in his apartment and should feel free to come in and take matzah anytime they want. And he does that on behalf of everybody. So I assume somebody on the west side does that here as well. But that's the general approach. So that way the Eruv Chatzeros takes effect for everyone. Meaning it's not limited geographically for us to our actual Chatzeros. The Shiloh, of course, in the postgame in Eruv Chatzeros, and this is the last thing I'll say about Eruvin, and then we'll actually come to Bava Basra topics, is that it's a Shiloh in the postgame about a hotel. You go to a hotel for Shabbos, what do? Do you make an Eruv Chatzeros? Do you not make an Eruv Chatzeros? So there are poskim who think that you need to, because, as I said, you know, the model is the lobby is the mavoi, the hallways are the chatzeros, and the rooms are your homes. So in order to carry from your home to a chatzer, you need an Eruv Chatzeros. But Rabbi Willig and many other poskim are mekel, and they do not require an Eruv Chatzeros, because at the end of the day, if you read carefully in your contract with a hotel, they can remove you from a room at any time that they so choose. Which means that you, in fact, do not own your room. You are not even considered to be a socher. You're not even a renter. And therefore, you have no ownership right inside of the hotel room. And therefore, it is not considered a different rishus. The owner of the hotel is one owner of all the hotels. Like, you don't need to make an Eruv Chatzeros if you have guests staying in a guest room in your home. Right? It's your home. They're staying there by your good graces. So you don't need to make an Eruv Chatzeros just because they're there for Shabbos. So the same thing would be true for a hotel. The owner of the hotel owns the entire thing, and it's nothing to do with you. And therefore, even if the owner is not a Jew, you do not need to make an Eruv Chatzeros in a hotel. Now, most kashrus organizations will require the mashgiach on site to make an Eruv Chatzeros. So if you ever go on a Pesach program, if you're ever at a catered bar mitzvah or a afruf or a shev shevruch, whatever it is, most likely the mashgiach of the hotel, who the mashgiach for the caterer, will be making an Eruv Chatzeros on behalf of all the people in the hotel.
If not, you're going to have always questions as to what the boundaries
are
ultimately going to be.
For sure. I'm saying, and I always get the shayla in terms of hotza and carrying. You know, always, you know, when people go to places like Hawaii, where the hotels are not really gated, they're kind of just open to the world. So, or Bali, or things like that, it's very hard, because can you carry outside into the hotel grounds on Shabbos? And the answer is, generally speaking, not, because there's no fence, there's no air of any kind. The question is, can you even do that inside the hotel? So the answer is, we're generally mako, because again, the owner of the hotel.
But that would require you, for example, when you go to that hotel in Bali, to literally walk around the hotel and make sure that if I'm going to take the position that I can do it, I halakhically can determine that
I've literally done FaceTime calls with people who have called me from Hawaii and walked me around the perimeter of the property of the hotel they're in to try and see if there's a full Eruv. And most of the time there's not. The only upshot for these hotels now is that a lot of hotels have, there's gate rules. So they have the pool area is completely fenced in as a safety feature. So even if it's not clearly apparent that it's fully fenced in, it almost always is. So what you could do is you can bring your stuff to somewhere in the pool area before Shabbos and then leave it there. And then you can, as long as you are within the gate area, the pool area, you can carry within that. So you go to the bar at the pool and you kind of ask them to hold on to your three books before Shabbos. Then you could sit at the pool area and read your books. So that's one solution to that problem. Okay, but that's all in
the
Maseches Eruvin.
So you're saying it's okay to swim on Shabbos.
Yeah, obviously, exactly. We're right, definitely.
Only because we're being recorded.
Right, exactly, exactly, definitely. On the recording, Laufer said that you should swim on Shabbos. Yeah, okay, so that's going to get me in trouble, but no, I do not. I want to be very clear. I do not endorse swimming on Shabbos in any kind. I don't even endorse men going to the mikvah on Shabbos. That's how machmir about swimming I am. Okay. Good. Okay. So let's get back to Bava Basra. Right. So we know that so partners who want to make a mechitza in their chatzer, in their courtyard. So bonin es hakosel ba'emsa. They build the wall in the middle. So note again, the Gemara is going to point this out. Obviously, but just I'm highlighting all the points in the Mishnah. Right. The Mishnah switched its language from they want to make a mechitza, and the Mishnah's requirement is that they build a wall. Right. So they want to divide, they want to make a fence in between them, they want to split, and the requirement of the Mishnah is to build a wall, because we'll have to see what they'll change in that language is. Makum shenagu livnos gvil, gazis, kefisin, and levanin. Places where the custom is to build, of gvil, gazis, kefisin, levanin, these are different types of building materials. It's not super relevant what they are specifically. They all are of differing strengths. Okay, so levanin are bricks, those are the strongest ones, and gvil is the least strong. And that's the first one, and it's a continuum. So it starts from the least sturdy material, and it goes to the strongest material. So the Mishnah says bonin, you have to build it out of whatever it is that the custom is to build. Hakol keminhag hamedina, whatever the custom of that place is. So there's an obvious question which we're going to spend most of the rest of today discussing, which is when the Mishnah says hakol keminhag hamedina, why is that necessary? If you're going to tell me that the place, that whatever the place's custom is to build it out of these four things, okay, so then that sounds like if the custom is to build it out of one of these four things, so then that means that we're following one of those four. So then why are you also telling me Hakol Kaminaga Medina? You could just tell me straight up Hakol Kaminaga Medina. I don't need you to list, right? And furthermore, let's keep reading the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah is going to tell me exactly what it looks like when I build such a wall out of this material. Gvil Zenosin Gimel Tvachim VeZenosin Gimel Tvachim. Both partners who are now splitting have to give half the space, which is the space of three tefachim, right? So as we're going to see when we get to the Gemara, part of the discussion here is, okay, how much space is there in this courtyard and how are they dividing it, right? Subdivisions are not always so simple. So if you're going to put up this type of gvil wall, whatever gvil is, so you need six tefachim of space, three from each side. Begazis, zenosin tefchaim u'mechza, zenosin tefchaim u'mechza, 2.5. Kfisin zenosin tefchaim, zenosin tefchaim, 2 and 2. Ubilavainin zenosin tefach u'mechza, zenosin tefach u'mechza. Right? So it's basically a range between how thick your wall has to be, ranging from 6 tefachim at the widest to 3 tefachim at the narrowest. Right? So 3 tefachim is about 12 inches, about a foot wide, whereas 6 tefachim is about 2 feet wide, roughly. If you use a 4-inch tefach, you know, that's a discussion of post, maybe it's 3 inches, maybe it's 5 inches. The general acceptance, the middle ground is 4 inches. So 3 tefach wall is a foot. 6 tefach wall would be 2 feet. So 2 feet wall, it's pretty thick. Saying, when we talk sheetrock, we're talking quarter inch sheetrock, right? Saying, so we're talking a lot of sheetrock here. That's a pretty thick wall. So a 2 foot wall is not nothing. So this is a substantial piece of masonry that has to happen.
How high is it?
Oh, good. So the Gemara, when we get to the Gemara, we're going to discuss how high the wall has to be and what the necessities of that are. That's going to be the second sugya that we're going to look at, which is what we'll probably look at. We'll probably get to it next week. But we're going to
the choice of the four, like Hakol, Kamina, Kamadina. Which of these four is according to
So there are those Rishonim, as we're going to see in just a few minutes, that do read it that way. But there's also other ways to read the Mishnah, which is what we're going to see. That's the subject of what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. So let's just finish the Mishnah. So the Mishnah continues. Lefikach, therefore, after all this is said, Im nafal hakosel, if the wall falls down, right? So we now know that if two partners want to divide a space with a wall, and they put up this wall where they're both required to give a certain amount of the land to the wall, and they pulled up this wall, and then one day it falls down. Hamakom v'ha'avanim shel shneihem. The presumption is that the space and the wall belongs to both of them. So that's very important. And as we're going to see, so that's Masa Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos as to what the presumption of the Mishnah is. You have an assumption of why this is important, Nathan?
No. I was just gonna suggest why Lafikach.
Yeah, why?
Presumably, it sounds like because both of them, for the Levanim, both of them contribute. So therefore, they're gonna say, yeah, maybe you can estimate. Okay, so half is yours and half is mine. But it sounds like you can't really do that. So both of them contributed. So it's both theirs.
So let me ask you a question. If that's true, right, we already know that they both had to contribute.
Right.
And we both know that they already know that they both had to contribute equally.
Yeah.
So why does it say lefikach, therefore? Should be pshita. Pshita, they should split it. What do you mean? They both had to give half the land. They both had to give, presumably, half the materials. So what's the lafika?
Well, but they're not saying that, they don't say that they have to split it. They say it's both theirs.
Ah, so what does that mean?
So, that...
What's the upshot of saying that something belongs to two people as opposed to saying that they should split? They should split it.
That they remain...
That they're partners in the wall.
They're partners in the wall, and therefore...
So they're both responsible for putting it back up.
So if we have a lawsuit over who owns what part of the wall, right? So in halacha, what's going to be the most governing principle? So Tosfos points out, and many of the Rishonim, Rashi disagrees with this reading of the Mishnah, which we'll see in a few minutes, but Tosfos points out that the upshot of this Mishnah saying, lefikach, hamakum v'avanim shel shnehem, is that it's la'afuki the idea of amotzi mechaver levaraya. You have no ability to say, well, they're mine, so you have to prove it that they're half yours. That never gets off the ground. We presume that all of the materials and all of the space of the wall, no matter what the situation was, the standard presumption is that it was split 50-50. That's where what we call the muhsak is. That's what the standard assumption will be in this particular case.
Doesn't that get into Yachloku?
So that's what I was going to say. The opposite of this reading would be Tadzad Yachloku. The fact that the Mishnah doesn't say Yachloku, because what's Yachloku? Yachloku is, I have money, you think some of it belongs to you. So we call that Maman Amutu B'Safek, so you say Chokin, right? But why is it a Safek? Because the fact that I have the money is called into question. And the Mishnah is saying, there's no question here. There's no uncertainty as to if all of the money belongs to me. We know it doesn't belong to me. We also know that it doesn't all belong to you. And not only that, we know exactly how much belongs to you and how much belongs to me. 50%. Therefore, not only is there no need for Yachloku, there's also no need for Amotzi Mechaver
Olav Harai. But isn't this essentially the same as the first mission of Metzia?
No. Because, right, what's the case in the first mission of Metzia?
Two people...
Shnaim Oaks and Batalis.
Yeah, and we say they're both Mufsa.
And what's the mission here?
That it's on the property?
Hashutafin.
Okay.
So what's the key distinction here? What's the definition of partnership? I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but what's the definition of partnership? Fundamentally.
50-50 in theory.
But not just 50-50 in theory, it's that each person is an equal owner of 100% together. As opposed to Shnaim Oaks and Metalis, where I only own 50% and it has nothing to do with your 50%.
Yeah.
Right? A shutaf is by definition a full owner of half of the whole thing. It's like it's a little bit like this. You're scratching the other side of your head with the wrong hand. But the reason why you have to explain it that way is because otherwise every partnership will have a full claim on the other half. Mm-hmm. Say, well, how do you know that that's not my half? Right? And what if I took possession of the whole thing? So now you have to always prove that 50% still belongs to you? Imagine a partnership where you invest $1 million with me. So then I say, no, it's my $1 million. So if you were an investor where you gave me a deposit of money and I'm supposed to invest on your behalf, so if I claim that I'm keeping the money, so then you have a claim against me. But if we're partners in this money, right, and it's split equally between us, you don't need to make a claim against me. You don't need to prove that it was your money. It is your money, right?
But it gets a little bit more nuanced than that. So it's almost like a condo co-op comparison.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
In many ways.
Correct.
Because there's a unit, and I own this half of the unit, and you own that half of the unit of the whole unit. But then there's the unit, and we each own 50% of the quote-unquote equity of the unit. It just so happens I'm on the left side and you're on the right side.
So that's it. In fact, you literally just said what the Gemara says. Right. So what we're going to get into the next step is, I mean, not today, because we're going to focus on the Minhag portion of the Mishnah, but when we get into the Din Chalukah, which is the major sugya here, there's two first major sugyas in the Gemara, which is first, how do you actually go about subdividing? Because this is the distinction the Gemara is focusing on. Right. When you're partners and you're subdividing, so what... By what way do you split a complete half ownership of every atom of what's going on there? Right? It's very difficult to do that. So is it just you'll take that side, I'll take this side, and that's a reflective of the reality, but we still own it jointly, or maybe it's completely separated, right? The alternative model would have been to say something like Shnaim Oaks and Batalis, where I actually have no ownership right in the other side. It's just the 50% that belongs to me, and the question is which 50% belongs to me, right? That's the other model. So that's why the halachos of Hashutafin are fundamentally different than the Mishnayos in the first paragraph of Bamatzia, which is how do we divide Mamun Hamutol Safik. The overarching governing principle of partnership is that the money is not Besafik. there's no question as to who the owners of the money is. Whereas in Shnayim Oaks and Metalis, the presumption walking into the door is we don't know who owns the money. Now, you might be holding all of it, you might be holding some of it, you might be entitled to all of it, and you might be holding none of it. But we don't know who owns it, we don't know who's holding it, we don't know anything. In Hashutafin, the presumption is that we know everything. And then we have to just figure out what to do with what we know. And that's sometimes messy. But that's a key distinction in partnerships. So we'll address this greater, more thoroughly when we get to the parts of the Gemara about Din Chalukah, probably next week.
What does putting up the wall do? Does it change the status?
So that's the second sugya.
Change the status of the ownership.
So we'll talk about what the wall does in terms of the status of the ownership. We'll also talk about which is your first question, which is how high the wall has to be, which is called Hezek Riya. So we'll see that when we get to the Gemara.
What happens if only one wants to put up? They say both want to put up.
The Gemara is going to address it. We're going to talk about what happens if only one side wants to do something. Can you force your partner? I'll give you another Gemara. The Gemara, I think it's on Daf Yud Beis. I don't remember. Daf Yud Gimel here. It's Sugya. It's the one, if you look a couple Daf ahead, there's pretty pictures on Daf Yud Gimel and Aleph. So this is one of the most complicated Sugyas in Masechet Bava Basra. It's overlooked by everybody, but it's a super complicated Sugya, and it's a lot of fun. I'm very much looking forward to when we get there. The question is, can you force your partner to sell to you? What if you wanted to dissolve the partnership and the other guy doesn't want to? So what rights do you have to get out of a partnership? How do you escape? Right? So that's the whole... There's an entire...
Is it actually in the contract of the partnership?
Not necessarily. It can be, but not necessarily. And the question is, of course, does the Gemara govern the way that partnership is supposed to be structured? Meaning, what if you write a contract that is keneged halacha? Right? So what does that do for us? So we're going to take a look at that. That's really what I want to talk about this morning. If we have time, we'll get started in that discussion, which is Hakol Kamina Kamedina, which is what is the role of local custom in terms of determining business practice. So we're going to see that in terms of the context of this sugya, and then we'll try and expand that a little bit more broadly to some of the other sugyas in Choshen Mishpat. Okay, so the Mishnah says, therefore, if it falls down, right, so the space belongs to both of them. V'chein bagina. And now the Mishnah says, and the same thing is true in a gina. The gina is your personal, private backyard. Okay? So the difference between a chatzer and a gina, as we're going to see, is that a chatzer is by definition shared. It's something that everybody has equal share to because of the nature of its use. Right? So all the homes on a chatzer automatically share in it. Right? If you buy a co-op or a condo or an apartment, right, no one would ever tell you that you don't get to use the hallway. Right? That's not possible. Right, it's not that one guy owns the hallway and you get an easement. No, you have an equal right to use the hallway. But the storage unit that comes with your apartment, right, so that's yours, right? But what if you sell half of it to somebody else, right? So that's not a right that comes with moving into the building, right? It's yours and you sold half of it and now you have a partner or you have some kind of a partnership with that half. So a gina is the equivalent of the storage unit. It's the half. Meaning there's no automatic right to use it, but you now have a partner and it's your private property, and it's his private property and you hold it together. And yet, the Mishnah says, the same thing is true that about a chaser as it is about a gina. So even when it's fully private property, meaning it's not semi-public, or semi-private I should say, but rather it's fully private and it's owned jointly, you can also force your, or at least if you are going to decide to subdivide the gina, you can follow the local custom in terms of building the wall. That's the Mishnah's din so far. Makom shenagu ligdor mechayven oso. And any place where they are required to make a fence, we will require you to do so. Aval babika, but if it's in a valley, meaning not what we call semi-private property, makom shenagu shelo ligdor ein mechayven oso. If there's no custom to fence in the property, so you have farmland in the valley, and there's no local custom here to build a wall or build a fence, we do not require you to put up said fence. Ela imratza konis l'soch shalo ubona. He moves into his own property and builds the fence in his own property by himself. Ve'ose chazis mi bachutz, and he should put things that stick out of the wall. Chazis is like a protrusion, so like a windowsill. So you ever see medieval walls, some of the stones kind of just stick out a little bit? That's what a chazis is. A chazis is like a small ledge that kind of sticks out from the wall. And they're placed at different points. There's different reasons why they exist. But one of the reasons why they're built, at least in terms of the in Mishnaic thinking, is that defines the external boundary of your property. right? If you're a wealthy farmer and you have a lot of farms and you have a lot of land, so you may put up fences between your different fields because, as we're going to see in the Gemara, you may want to plant different crops, right? And if you have planting multiple different types of crops, so there are rules about how close to each other you can plant different types of crops because of the prohibition of klai. So one of the solutions in maximizing space for farmland when it comes to making sure you don't have klayim is to put up a wall. So when you put up a wall between fences, between your own property, it does not need any symbolic designation as a boundary line other than to serve as a physical boundary. But when it's on the external side, so you need to show people, no, this is my private property. So if there are protrusions from the wall, that's how the Mishnah will determine that this is my domain, not yours. Okay, lefikach. And now the Mishnah says, again, lefikach. Therefore, in nafal hakosel, in the bikah, as opposed to in the chatzer, if the wall falls down, hamakom avanim shalo, the place and the stones belong to him. Right? Im asu midash neim, if they do it both together willingly, bodin es hakosel ve'emsa, they build the wall, meaning still in the bikah. Right? Now we're still in the valley, not in the chatzer anymore. We're still in the valley, which means that the presumption is that if you have a wall, we assume that it belongs fully to you. And if it falls down, we assume the space and the stones, the materials are all yours. Okay? But if they both want to build a wall, so let's say you're in the valley and you have a border, you have a neighbor, and the two of you decide to build a wall together. So there, bonin es hakosel be'emsa, you build the wall in the middle, ve'osin chazis mikan umikan, and you put the protrusions on both sides, because it has to demarcate that both sides are the external property of somebody else, right? On my side, the chazis shows me that this is the end of my property, the other side is his. And on his side, the protrusions show that the other side is his and this side is mine. And that way we know that this is the external boundary wall.
It's interesting because it goes to the question as to, is the chazit there for the purposes of creating the demarcation between the partners, or is it there for creating the demarcation of the total property for the rest of the world? So it's clearly the former and not the latter in this particular case.
Excellent. We get to Daf Dalet, we'll talk about it. Saying that, I think if I recall correctly, I didn't do Chazar of the first paragraph before I started preparing, but if I recall correctly, it's Machlokes in the Gemara, but it's definitely discussed in the Rishonim how that plays out. So we'll see when we get to Daf Dalet. I think it's on Daf Dalet, if I recall. But anyway, we'll get there. Lefikach, therefore, a lot of Lefikachs in this Mishnah, imnafa hakosel hamakom avanim shel shneihem, right? And if there's a chazus on both sides, so then we of course know that if it falls down, so we know that the space of the wall as well as the wall belong to both of them. And that's, again, the same presumption as before. So that
why
is...
Why do they have to bring in what's that teaching us?
Because the fundamental nature of the chatzer and the bika and the gina are different types of property. Right? A chatzer is one that's by definition shared. So everybody has some kind of a claim to the use of that space, right, inherently. Right. Whereas a bika, nobody has a claim to the use of space other than their own. So when we're talking in the second half of the Mishnah, we're not talking about how to separate shared space, we're talking about how to demarcate between separate spaces. And the difference, of course, is that in a shared space that we demarcated, so it's much more obvious that we own things together. Whereas if it's demarcating the boundary line between two private properties, so in the event that things fall down, it's much less clear what the responsibilities are to deal with that, right? I mean, one thing that the mission did not address is, okay, so if the wall falls down, who's required to do salvage, demolition, and repair? Right, so even if we said that the wall was agreed to by both, and they both put it up together and it fell down, so what if the other guy sold his property 20 years ago, and now the wall that I built with the previous owner fell down? So who owns that side of the wall? Does the current landowner own that side of the wall? Is he required to clean up the wall? Is he required to help me make the repair? Right. The fact that I made this agreement with his predecessor, what does that say about the current obligations now when somebody else owns it? I'll make it even crazier. What if they both sold? I mean, me and my neighbor, Reuven and Shimon, had two pieces of property. Reuven and Shimon together decided we were going to build a nice 10-foot wall between our properties. And then they both sold the properties and moved on. They wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael. They bought apartments in Netanya, and now they live in the same apartment complex in their chavrusas. Beautiful. And the people they sold to, Levi and Yehuda, are screaming at each other, and they're just shooting at each other all day long. And then the wall falls down. So what's Levi and Yehuda going to do? So who owns the wall? The guys who put up the wall are gone. The obligation to put the wall back up was based on an agreement between two parties that are not relevant anymore. So is the fact that there was a wall here, does that impact our approach at all? right? And that's part of what we're going to have to look at as we as the Gemara breaks down this Mishnah. So as we go through the sugya, that's what we're going to take a look at. Yeah,
Nathan. So for asking questions on the Mishnah, if they suggest that it's your shared responsibility if in a private property like a bika or a gina, then why do I have to teach the first case about a chutzner?
So like this, as we're going to see, and the Gemara is going to highlight this, the gina is fundamentally different than a bika and a chutzner. I mean, a chutzner and bika are two completely separate options, right? Chutzner is fundamentally shared property. Bika is fundamentally private property, right? Gina is weird because gina is private property. It's not fundamentally shared. It's private property where you have a partnership. There's multiple people who might own it together, but it's not granted by right. It's something that you have to engage in a partnership with. Whereas a chatzer, you have rights to use it, but you don't necessarily own it per se. Bika is fully your property, and he has fully his property, and we have to figure out how to bridge the gap. So basically, there's a continuum here. It's property that we all own jointly, sort of, kind of, but nobody really owns it, so to speak. It's really just that we all have the rights to use it. Bika, on the other end of the spectrum, is completely private property where I want to deal with my annoying neighbors. And then there's somewhere in between, which is what we call jointly held property, where everybody actually has real ownership rights in it, and you just don't like the guys that you own it with, and now you're kind of stuck. So now what do you do? Right? And there might be different rules that govern the way we would either dissolve those agreements, dissolve those partnerships, or at least subdivide the space for the purposes of all the people who are engaged. So let's at least... So before we even get to the Rashi and the Tosfos here and to discuss some things, let's just take a look at the Gemara to give us some context to some of these questions that we asked in the Mishnah.
What time do we go to?
8:30, I think. Is that okay? 8:30. So we have 5 minutes left. So let's just start the Gemara, and then next time we'll pick up with the Gemara and we'll talk about Minhag HaMedina. I don't think we're gonna have time to address it fully today, but at least let's see where we get. So Avruah Mai Mechitza, right? So remember the Mishnah. What we said before, I told you on the first line of the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah is Shtaf and Shtaratz Lasus Mechitza B'Chatzer Bonin Etakosel, right? The Mishnah kind of swaps its language in the first line. It starts with saying they want to make a Mechitza, and then the Mishnah requires them to build a wall. So what's going on? So Savruah, those rabbis who were learning the Mishnah, they thought, my mechitza, what is the definition of the word mechitza? Guda, it means a wall. How do they know?
It means
a wall. Actual wall, meaning as opposed to the mechitza that we use here, which definitely most certainly is not a wall, right? So not a mechitza in shul, but an actual full-on wall. Okay? Gitatanya, mechitzas hakerem shenifritza. Mechitza of a kerem, the separating, the divider of a vineyard that got a hole in it. Omer lo gedor. We tell him, fence it up, mend it. Chazra v'nifritza, it breaks again. There's another hole pops in the fence. Omer lo gedor. We tell him, fence it up. Nisya'i shemena v'lo gadra. If the owner of the fence, of the vineyards, he's like, forget it, I can't deal with this, and he doesn't build the fence. Hareza kidish. It makes it klayim. V'chayim v'achri yusa. I'm sorry? Well, we'll get to Garmin. We're not there yet. Right? V'chayiv v'achri yusa, and he's chayiv to pay for the klayim that his field will now make his neighbor. So the Gemara says, Taima, what's the reason that he's chayiv? Diratsu, because they want to make a distinction. Right? Remember, the mission, how are we getting here? The Gemara says, how do I know that mechitza means a wall? Because I have this braisa that says that in a field of klayim between me and my neighbor, there's a wall. It's a mechitza. It's a real fence. And if it gets a hole, I have to fence it up. Gidor. I literally have to make a new fence, right? And if I decide not to, so I've ruined that guy's wheat or I've ruined that guy's grapes, depending on what I have and what he has, it's now klayim. And because I refuse to fix the fence, I'm chayiv to pay for the now asur b'hana field that you have.
So not knowing a whole lot about the laws of klayim, the fence, a good fence becomes a presumption of no claim, regardless of whether was actually claim or not, and vice versa.
Yes. So we'll see when we look at Rashi and Tosfos, not today, but that's a major sugya of discussion here. The shortest version is basically the way claim works is that it's not until it grows a certain amount in a situation that we would consider to be claim before it becomes claim. So that gives us some time to work with. So that means that as long as the guy is in the process of fixing it, we'll assume that that time frame has not yet been reached. However, if the guy says, I'm not doing this, we don't even wait for the time to get there. We assume it's already happened. And the reason why we can play both sides is because of that time delineation. So it's a machlokas rishonim, major machlokas rishonim, how we assess that and how that makes any sense.
but knowing nothing about agriculture.
Yes.
When you build a wall,
yeah,
your wheat seeds, fly over to the barley side.
No,
the
so
barley
we have. So there are.
Notwithstanding,
no, so there
the
are rules. So even with the fence, there are rules about distancing, and there's rules about how far. Okay. See, there's still rules. It's not. It's not like your grapes can kind of hover over the fence and like just, oh, we have a fence. It's not pro forma.
Okay.
There are still rules that govern it. But even within the context of those rules, a hole in the fence eliminates the validity of said fence, whatever the fence does in its own way. But before we get into the client piece, right? Why is the Gemara bringing this up? Because the Gemara makes the following deal. Taima deratsu, right? What does our Mishnah say? What's the reason why they can build this fence, this wall? Because they want to. Halo ratsu, ein mechayv enoso. But if they don't want to, in our Mishnah, you cannot require him to build a fence. You cannot require him to build a wall, right? Why does the Mishnah say mechitza and then switch it to kosel, right? Why do they think that it means it's a wall, the same as kosel? Because they want to do this. The implication, of course, therefore being that if they don't want to build a wall, then they can't be obligated to build a wall. So if one partner says, I'm not interested in this, you can't force him to build a wall. Why? Alma, therefore we see, hezek re'ia, lav shmei hezek. The damage that comes from privacy damage is not considered damage in halakha. Which means you being able to invade my privacy and see what I do in my backyard is not a form of damage that halakha recognizes as you being able to prevent by forcing your partner to build a wall. That's part one. Let's just read two more lines, see the other side. Ve'ema, so then the Gemara suggests, okay, what about the other way? Mechitza plugta. Maybe mechitza doesn't mean a wall at all, it just means a subdivision. Literally, we're just going to demarcate that this side is mine and this side is yours, right? Before, a chatzar is shared rights, so everybody could use the whole thing, right? That means I could go to the part that's behind your house, you can go to the part that's in front of my house, right? And we all have equal rights to it. So maybe that when the Mishnah says mechitza, what it really just means is to divide, right? We'll just spray some spray paint on the floor, here's the line, nobody cross the line. Red Rover, don't cross the line over here, right? So the Gemara says, k'dichsei batihi mechetzas ha'eda. Here's this part of the community, right? This part, as opposed to the other part. V'kivan deratsu, and if they want, bonin es harkoso bal karcho. And since they want to build a wall, so then you could force them to actually build the wall. So the Gemara says, Alma, if that's true, hezek re'iya shmei hezek. So that means that privacy damage is considered real damage. So the Gemara says, ihachi, if you're right, hold the thought, because the Gemara says it. Ihachi, if that's true, hai shiratsu la'asos mechitza, shiratsu la'chatzos mibayilei. If you're right that the Mishnah is really talking about two people who just want to subdivide, so then the language of the Mishnah is incorrect. It shouldn't say in the Mishnah, Shiratu la'asos mechitza, that they want to make a mechitza. It should just say that they want to split. They want to subdivide. But it doesn't say that. So elamai, so must be, what does it mean in the Mishnah? Guda, it must mean that it's a real wall. So bonin es hakosel, so they build a wall. Then the Mishnah says, so then the Gemara says, okay, but if you're right that it really means a wall, that the word mechitza does not mean a subdivision, but it actually means a wall, so then why does the Mishnah in the next line say that they build a wall? Just say, bonin osomi ba'ilei. Should just say, build it. Right? If they want to build a wall, they should build it. That would be the functional way of saying it. So the Gemara says, no. Here, let me tell you why it means a wall and why it needs both languages of wall. Itana oso, if I said oso, build it, hava amina, I would have thought, b'mesipas ba'alma. I could just put up a trellis of some kind. You know, a flimsy, low subdivision fence. Nothing too substantial. Kamash malan, the Mishnah is coming to teach you, kosel. That once they agree that they want to split, you can force the other guy to build a wall. Now, what we're going to talk about, we're going to stop here, but we're going to talk about next time, is what is the nature of this wall and what governs the ability to force one side or the other to actually engage in building this wall. And then when we take that, then we'll be able to move into the next part of the Gemara, which is the discussion of hezek re'iya and privacy rights in halacha based on the height and the shapes of these walls.
One side wants the wall, the other side